Bob Robertson saw from the morning's row with his wife, came home warily, step after step reluctantly up the fibre-carpeted stairs. The flats had no lift, with a stop on each of the floors as though his breath had morally given out. Here, six floors up, was his door. Red shone through the frosted panels where a strip of firelight reached over the hall. Rattling the key in, he felt the lock slip round. Then, for the hall was jasminey with her scent, he tentatively called, "Betty?" Before there was time for an answer, he felt her absence. She'd gone out, certainly. She would be at the Flicks. "Damn," said Robertson flatly. He'd meant to make things all right. This was what intentions came to. He hung up his hat in the dark. Robertson was an ex-officer. As the war kept receding, this counted for less and less. Still, on the strength of this and of a school that was almost public, he travelled in high-class etchings and educational prints. His wife, Betty, bought shiny, courageous stockings in bargain basements and regretted to friends that they could not afford children. Life disheartened her, really, and more of their food came back cooked from the delicatessen in paper bags. The sitting-room door was confidentially open. Two armchair backs against the red waning fire took off somehow one's idea of a home. Dull with patent fueling, but in mother's tradition, the open fire kept something inside alight. Bitterly retrospective, Robertson reached out for the switch. But there was no electricity. He felt round in his pocket. He had no shilling.
"Good Lord, Bobbit," said Constance, turning in an armchair. "Oh, good Lord," he replied, shaken. "Constance? Oh, don't do that again." "I was asleep. Got a shilling." "No, spent it. I've got Betty's latchkey. She's with Diane. I'm waiting here to borrow my bus fare home." "Oh, you are the limit," he said, and having discovered her face looking up at him, kissed it, which was their way. "Steady," she said, rearranging the curl on her forehead. She was about 17. "Got that job yet?" "What do you expect?" said Constance sardonically. "Well, better get married." "Oh, naturally," agreed Constance. "But then, as I always say..." She didn't, however, say it. He sat down in the other armchair, stretched out his legs, and sighed. I and Betty had a dust-up. Constance half listened quite calmly. "You know, she's impossible if I never say it again. It's really a bit stiff sometimes. Of course, I know things come hard on her, but she does muddle about so." This was just. All day long she went clicking about the flat in those high-heeled old satin slippers with straps undone. She would crouch in front of the grate and groan at the messy grey ashes. He knew what was wrong with Betty. She wanted a gas fire. All day long she would sigh that she was done in. "It's snug sitting here in the dark. Just you and I, Constance. You don't know what I miss." "Bobbit, look here. I'm hungry," she interrupted. "I suppose you haven't got any tinned salmon here?"
He went to see. She followed. He struck matches. Laughing, they groped their way to the kitchenette. He dropped spent matches. She stamped them carefully out. Here was half a pork pie, chiefly pastry. There, three split peaches floating syrupy in a Woolworth dish. The food smelled strong in the close air. There was a smell of old gas from the cooker. All delicate fingertips, Constance fished up a peach, leaning forward to let the syrup drip clear of her tight black frock. He watched. Flame crept unnoticed up the match to his fingers. He swore sharply. They were in the dark. They followed each other by touch, till a pale fluctuation of firelight led them back to the hall. Robertson had brought the pork pie with him. "But Betty'll be coming in," he said gloomily.
"Well, what of it?"
She knelt to poke the fire, making it light the room. Then her voice changed to an odd note.
"I say, do you ever have any money?"
"Bus fare? Oh, don't go yet, there's a good girl."
"No, but I want some money. A good deal."
"Marry money," he said, intent on what he was at. He had settled down with the pie balanced on one knee and was hacking away at the crust with a pocket knife. "Marry money," he went on waggishly, still intent. But he put out a hand for Constance's.
"But you damn fool!" cried Constance, starting up very suddenly, standing beside the door and clicking the impotent switch up and down, up and down. "I need money now. I want it at once, can't you see?" He was unnerved by her outburst, as though a cold wind snatched open the doors of the flat. He contracted into himself, defensive and unfriendly. She had ruined their fun. He wished she would shut up.
"See?" he repeated, dividing the pie accurately. "No, I don't specially see. We all want money like that."
Her high heel rapped the floor. "But I must have it now. Do you have to be told point blank? I've got to get right out. Soon." Her heel stopped and she stood desperately still.
With a dull shock, he understood and said under his breath, "Constance."
"Ooh, you wicked girl," said Constance with hopeless frivolity. "Go on. Consider it said."
Uneasy, for to what extent had she not already imposed on him? And with rising anger, he said, "But why in the hell's name come to me? Anyway," he added quickly, "I've got no money. And if I had my girl, think what Betty might think."
"My mistake," said Constance. "It just occurred to me, as we seem to be getting along so well, I've got to get that money, so any port in a storm."
"So you thought it was worth trying?" Exasperated by her contemptuous lightness, her irony, and this net of doom she was casting about the flat, he glared in the firelight at his portion of pie. She'd ruined his appetite. At last, he could say more gently, "What did you do it for?"
"New clothes," said Constance loudly. "Get out of here, you little—" "Yes, all right," she said, "I'm going."
"No, look here, stop. Do, for God's sake, be decent with me. I'm not down on you, but I'm damned if I'll stand your attitude. Whatever possessed you, you little fool?"
"I suppose I was balmy," said Constance, turning away.
"Love?" he said, uneasy.
"I said I suppose I was balmy. Only, Bobbitt, look here, don't keep going on about marriage, because it makes you sound silly now, doesn't it?"
"But I don't see why you shouldn't," he said eagerly. "I'd marry you. There'd be heaps of men. All men aren't such swines. I'd marry you."
"I wouldn't marry you," said Constance. "Not for anything now. Not if it had been you. I'd rather walk into the Serpentine, thanks all the same."
"Oh, well. But it's been a nice evening, hasn't it?"
"Well, then, listen," she said. "What about the money? Really, you needn't worry. I swear you'll get it back. I want about £50. I think I could manage on that. Will you or won't you? I've got no time to be sweet."
"Well," he began, "because when you come to think of it, because, after all, the thing is," he began again, with a frankness that should have won her, "well, you see how I stand. I've got Betty to think of."
"Yes, you don't half think of Betty."
"Well, damn it all, she's my wife."
"Lucky girl."
"I must say, Constance, you're a very poor gold digger," she said drearily. "I've never tried before." "What about whoever it was?"
"Poh, I'd rather walk into the Serpentine."
"Blast," he said, "you spoil everything." And he sat huddled forward, his head in his hands. For really, there seemed no peace for him anywhere. He did simply want a woman to cheer him up. Betty was weak and Constance was bad right through.
"Sorry I came," she said, groping round for her hat.
He sat on, scrubbing his fingers up through his hair. "It's no good about the money." She listened. He listened. The fire snapped.
"Righto, I'm off."
"Well, I'll think out something," he said. I'll write in a day or two. I swear I'll see you through." At this point, Betty, having lent Constance her latchkey, was forced to ring at the door of her own flat. She rang twice, eager to be at home. As Robertson sat on, stupefied, Constance went to the door.
"Hello, Con," he heard Betty greet her. "Find your way in, all right?" "Yep. Bobbitt's back. I've been trying to borrow money."
"I don't know what you're thinking of," Betty said languidly. "We don't have any money."
"Hello, Bobbitt."
"Hello. What's up with the light?"
"We're right out of shillings."
"Here are three in the cigarette box. There are always some there." "Oh, we're not so broke as you think," Betty said, laughing to Constance. "How much do you want, Con?"
"Sixpence. I want my bus fare."
"Well,
take a shilling."
Betty clinked the shilling into the meter. The flat sprang into sight. Constance strolled to a glass and made up her mouth scarlet, then pulled on her tight little hat with a jockey brim. She wrapped up her chin in her collar.
"I must be pushing along," she said. "Thanks for the shilling.
Sorry, darling, we can't keep you to supper, but the fact is I don't think the galantine... I must get along anyhow. Mother'll be raging. Besides, I've had some pig pie.
Splendid. Go on, Bobbitt. Go to the door with her.
When he came back from the door, Robertson saw at once how battered Betty was looking. The fact was she couldn't get on without him. She curled up under his anger and went to bits. She must have been crying, for the mascara had run right round her eyes. Now she was fluffing her hair up, for him especially. He could not know that her throat, under the tight pink pearls, was burning just at the point where the Dietrich's throat had been kissed some minutes before. Her fox fur slid off one shoulder. She just sat where Constance had sat, looking up at him.
"Oh, Bobbitt," she said. "I've been so... Oh, I don't know. But I do get so fed up."
"Poor girl," he said, touching her cheek. She sighed and caught at his hand and sat fondling it, with her head back on his arm and her long lashes turned down.
"I feel rotten," she said, "about everything."
"Oh, well. You've been washing your hair."
"Look at my pearls. Swan and Edgar. 2 and 11. 3. Was I awful? I had to have something."
"I like you to have pretty things."
"Yes. You are as sweet about that." "Constance is a funny girl," she said later. "So independent, I can't make her out. Did you talk much?"
"Not particularly."
"I'm sorry for her, in a way. Oh, the fire's nearly out."
The fire, indeed, had gone dull in the brilliant glare. One had thought Robertson half-heartedly poking it quite enough of that. "It's wasted," he said, "when we're out blazing away all the time. How would it really be if we had a gas fire?"
"Oh, but I love the firelight. It's so homey. It's just doing the grate. Still, I do love the firelight."
"How would it be," he said, "if we cleared right out of all this and started a chicken farm? I've got that bit saved. I'm just as fed up as you are. You know, in the country somewhere."
"Bobbitt, and a sweet cottage."
They held hands to think of it. He thought of huts and chickens. She thought of children. A country silence crept into the London flat. Outside, there might have been poplars vaguely and gravely swaying. They felt oddly secure.
"You and me, we've never had much of a break."
"It's funny," she said on their way to bed that night, "the way that girl Constance never has the price of a bus fare. I often wonder what will become of her."